you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour. You're about to hear the continuation of the epic Romano-Saxon War by Josh Hutchins. This is the audio version of our first Twilight Histories book, written by Josh Hutchins. If you're enjoying this series, I highly recommend you pick up the book. And now, on to the story.
The German summer gives its final gasp to autumn, and the forests blaze in orange and yellow, punctuated with the deep green of pines and firs. The skies are a perfect blue, with air as crisp as a newly picked apple. I find myself in the Dark Age version of a backyard, watching two men split a log with hand tools. Glycerin is sharing his knowledge of timber with them, instructing on the finer ways of accomplishing the task. Praxos walks to my side and hands me a small loaf of warm bread and pours more ale into my cup. Where did you get this? He gestures over his shoulder.
Heck, it is a decent baker, and I purchased this ale at the Golden Bear.
We both drink deeply, wiping the foam from our short beards.
I have a report for you concerning this training.
He shakes his head. It sounds like there's a problem. I smirk.
It's these Saxons, apprentice. They are brave, yes, fierce, ferocious, deadly, whatever. But they have no discipline. They are the best warriors I've ever encountered. But they are not soldiers. In 8 centuries of Roman history, no band of great warriors has defeated them without also being great soldiers.
He huffs out of breath. I turn my head to him. Praxos, just do your best. And remember this. The Romans won't know we're coming. We have the element of surprise.
Germanic tribes have been assailing Rome by crossing the Rhine for a long time, apprentice. That surprise may not be what you think it is.
Well, we've got more fighters than we ever really expected to have. Good men.
Sure. That rousing speech you gave helped.
He smirks. I'm going to pretend you didn't make that joke for the 50th time just now. As I said, all the other times, I was drunk. I had no idea that wine was so potent. Besides, we were celebrating the agreement with Daragos. Let's get back to business here. Glycerin's riverboats can carry enough supplies to keep us fed without any foraging. And don't get me started on the euphemism of foraging. We have extra shoes and boots for the men. They are all armored with actual armor. I hold up a hand, stalling his next interjection. Yes, yes, I know. Much of that armor is leather, not iron. But it is armor nonetheless. We have enough horses to carry 400 men. We have mobile blacksmith shops. We've built siege equipment, trained with it, disassembled it, prepared it for travel. The army, and I'm going to continue calling it an army, Praxos, even over your objections, the army is healthy. We've dozens of scouting reports, excellent maps, and technologies to employ against the Romans, who'll never know what hit them. We look at each other for a few seconds. Plus we have you, Praxos, a former Roman centurion, a man who knows how the Romans fight and knows their weaknesses. He takes another drink.
Yes, yet you are conveniently not talking about the weaknesses we have. By using the riverboats to supply the army, we are fettering ourselves to the Isil River.
No. We are using riverboats to move supplies upriver, in lieu of moving them by hand and horse. Once we reach a point where we must leave the river, we'll transfer those supplies off the boats. We'll then use the boats as a communication line. In fact, we should probably set up a supply depot at the head of the Isil.
Fine, fine. But transferring supplies off boats and onto horses in the field seems, to me, an invitation to disaster. Second, the Romans will almost undoubtedly still outnumber us, no matter how many men we have, and no matter where we attack. And we'll only be fighting them after we travel far inland. The good news, if I am forced to admit it, is that your use of a sword is no longer the worst I've ever seen.
And my arm is healing well. I hold up my forearm, an ugly scar in its center. Prexo seems to grin.
Tell me, how did you dream up these bizarre weapons? A bow on its side, with a box of arrows on top? By what evil genius did this come to you?
I shrug. Deciding to keep my lessons at the Bronislaw Academy of Primitive Weaponry a secret. Telling him the Chukonu was invented in ancient China would be a pointless thing to say. Mechanically they work, but do you think we can really use them in a fight?
I do. Egric's little army of woodmakers will have more than 1,000 made in 2 days from now.
1,000? I thought we were going to do a couple hundred.
Once I saw how they performed, I increased your demand. I apologize if that was insubordinate of me.
Insubordinate? It's fine. We'll just have a strong corps of artillery, that's all. What else?
Caltrops. I've seen them used before, but not in such quantity as we have now. But these pungy sticks, those are only the result of a sick mind like yours. Pickets, yes, Romans use those, so they are nothing new. But I don't know if we, pardon me, they ever use such stakes to protect archers against a mounted attack. And Romans never smeared their own manure on the tips of such sticks. I do not know if I should admire your brilliance, or if I should fear it.
Praxis, do you ever wonder why manure stinks? It's a warning. It's bad for you. Your body wants it out for a reason. We're just putting it back in. Bacteria, you know. I give a thin smile. Anyhow, I think we should do like the Romans and build a defensive camp at the end of each day. We use the caltrops to deter any mounted raids, along with small ditches and such. The caltrops are even quick enough to cover a retreat or deter followers. We should use the punchy sticks around the camp, much like we use the pickets, only a lot more of them. We send out human pickets at night and scouts during the day. The bells and the horns will help raise the alarm when it's needed. As you said, the Romans will have the advantage in terms of numbers and armor. Plus, they will be in well-established defensive locations, with well-practiced, mapped, and scouted areas around them. Romans in this time will be using lots of cavalry, right? Praxos gives me a wry smile.
Where did you learn Roman tactics? Something you aren't telling me.
I take a drink.
While we're on the subject of your secret knowledge, apprentice, tell me what that crazy hag said that night.
I know lots of crazy hags, Praxos. You'll need to be more specific.
No, no. You know exactly what crazy hag I'm referring to. That night we first met Daragos, the woman said something to you.
I sigh. Her name is Potsa. Or it was, anyway. Dergos wanted to meet with both her and me together. It was about an arcane language I understand. I'm sure you've noticed by now that I have a talent for languages.
I have recognized it, yes.
Well, you don't really have a clue as to how far that talent goes. I'm not exaggerating by telling you that I know every language in the world. Never mind how, I just do. I take a drink. I was very curious to hear what she would have told me in private. She had some sort of bad reaction to Hecate. I don't know why, but I think that is what drove her over the edge.
Drove her over the edge? You do have a way with words, apprentice. Just say it. She killed herself. I will ask no more on this. I will simply accept that you know what everyone is saying, regardless of what tongue they say it in. Do you have the same mystic power for knowing what the Romans are planning?
Sorry, I don't.
Oi, are you two finished flirting? We could use a hand over here,
Glycerin says, staggering away from the log splitting to catch his breath. We both ignore him.
But you haven't answered me. What did Potza say to you?
She warned me. I look at him. I can tell this answer is not going to satisfy him. She warned me about Hecate, I whisper.
Hecate?
He asks.
Shh.
Please be quiet with this. She called Hecate a baby killer. Praxos makes a confused sort of face with one eyebrow up and his mouth twisted in an amused frown.
I know. It makes no sense to me either. Indeed. I will keep it to myself. Have you told anyone else?
I shake my head. Glycerin is notorious for letting things slip. And Kindheart, well, he's clearly sweet on Hecate, so I can't tell him.
What about Ingrid? Have you told her?
Huh. Another joke, right? Why would I tell her? I'm pretty sure she doesn't even notice me. Praxos drains the remainder of his ale and refills it from the pitcher nearby.
You, me, and Glycerin can trust each other implicitly. True, Glycerin has a loose tongue, but not due to treachery. He's simply gregarious, the very antithesis of caution. I, like you, do not trust Hecate. And with her and Kynard being inseparable, we cannot trust either of them. Who's left? Ingrid? I don't think we should trouble her with this. Egric? Dergos? We left Priam back in Britannia. He would be most helpful right now.
I doubt he's alive.
His wounds were
grievous. It was bad. And with Hengst and Thorium around, I trail off, my attention being arrested by a small figure walking towards us. The figure is slightly shorter than me, bundled in furs to hide her gently curving hips and the bulge of her breasts. Her eyes, even from this distance, are like brilliant blue particle beams. Her pouty lips, eagerly awaiting the moment to make the next jape on me.
Her apprentice!
Praxos looks at me with a bemused face.
Right. She may not notice you, but you certainly notice her.
Praxos says in a hushed tone.
Hello, Ingrid.
Praxos says. I merely nod.
What are you two doing? Drinking beer? Wagging your chins?
We are making plans. Talking.
Oh, yes. Yes, you talk, and you talk. But never any action. When will you actually do something?
On that I completely agree,
Glycerin says, from the far side of his log.
Duh! Shut up, you. Ingrid don't need your approval. You talk too much, just like them.
Glycerin smiles at her, then smiles at us and returns to his work, hammering away at a splitting wedge. Did you come out here just to quarrel with us? She squints.
You say this as if quarreling is not good enough. Ingrid came here to listen to plans for killing Romans.
Praxos and I look at each other sideways.
What? You think Ingrid cannot hear plans? Cannot understand plans because she is woman?
I can't help it. A smile breaks across my face, and she lashes out with a lightning quick punch to my shoulder.
Do not think you can leave me here. Ingrid don't care how many men you have. You go to kill Romans, Ingrid goes with you.
She steps back and huffs, settling her hands on her hips.
Now, pour Ingrid some of that beer.
Kynard, is it always this cold here? I can't feel my testicles. I imagine him grinning, but his mouth is obscured by a frosty beard. He merely chuckles. Stupid Dark Age European winter, I mutter. To be honest, my testicles are fine. It's my face and fingers going numb. There's no snow yet, and the sky is only slightly overcast. We've entered a wild tract of land, populated by contorted evergreen trees. The ground is littered with orange and brown needles. At least the wind has stopped blowing. I sigh. Well, if I'm going to complain about the cold, I guess I should get off this horse and try walking for a while, like the men.
Rocking is what keeps you warm. It's the friction between your legs that keeps balls warm, apprentice. Is there no cold season in Britannia?
Yes, but I was a blacksmith apprentice, remember? I was never far from a warm fire. I want to tell him about the luxury of central plasma-sourced heat and air, but no. I catch myself staring at Hecate from behind. The way her rear end lightly bumps along with the motion of the horse, I look away.
Apprentice, what is really on your mind?
What do you mean? He smirks.
I can tell when you are having thoughts of something else. So, just ask me what you want to know.
I shake my head. Nothing. Just thinking our plan through in my head. He nods.
Every report we've heard, my sons are being held in Xanathan. It makes sense. That is where Roman Legion is kept, where the Lippa and the Rhine meet.
I'm really just picturing this cargo transfer once we reach the headwaters of the Isle. I point to the lazy river sauntering past us, about 20 yards to my right. I think we should set up a protected spot on the river for the boats. Maybe a small fortified encampment next to the river, with a palisade to the nearest bank. A supply depot. Kynard shrugs.
If our friendly little pirate Glycerin cannot keep the boats safe, who can?
Very well, I frown, but mostly in agreement. What is it, a day of travel from here to Xanathan?
About that, yes.
One legion at Phaterocastra, another at, how do you pronounce it, Nijmegen? He shrugs.
Close enough.
Oh, and one more legion at Nova Isium. So about 15,000 men altogether.
Yes, plus the arrestation of auxiliaries kept at Xenaton. But with the drama inside Rome last few years, I doubt those legions are at full strength, if they're there at all.
I rub my gloved hands together, trying to warm them, racking my brain as to how the Roman front on the Rhine might have been during my own timeline. I'm not sure. The river hisses and bubbles. I take a moment to observe it. One of Glycerin's riverboats keeps pace with us, its oars making a soft thud and swish as they propel them forward, carrying our food stores and other equipment. Many Germanic tribes crossed into Rome a few years ago, during the reign of Magnus Maximus, right?
From what I am told, land west of Rhine was no longer Roman, but was part of new Gallic Empire. Though this did not last. After Romans regained control, they sent sorties into Germania to remind us of this fact.
I exhale. Kynhard?
Yes?
Haven't you Saxons been to Britannia before? Daragos acted like you changed her mind on what Britannia was like. Doesn't she know? Don't you Saxons already know what Britannia's like?
She has never been there herself. We have been dealing with the Goths, Vandals, Franks, Romans, Slavs, so there has been little time to raid the island. Daragos thinks it's just waste of time. She thinks it is just way to distract and destroy young men who go there to steal wealth. For a mother, it is truly a grey island. I, being a strapping young man, have always known otherwise.
I see. I purse my lips. There's a long pause. Kynhard, why are we doing this?
I can think of no better way to pass the time.
No, I mean this. I gesture all around with my hand. Why are we going to kill Romans? Why are we planning to go kill Britons? He smiles.
Like I said, I can think of no better way to pass the time.
I smile and slump a little.
Are you having second thoughts?
No. I want to get back to Britannia. I do. We both have unsettled business with thorium. Lots of folks on the island will suffer if we don't return. I crinkle my forehead. I guess that makes us a liberation army of sorts.
Right now, we need to focus on liberating 10,000 Roman heads from 10,000 Roman necks.
I nod.
Riding behind you keeps me warm, love, he says, louder and huskier.
Hecate looks over her shoulder and raises an eyebrow. She pulls back on her mare's reins and slips in between Kynhard and me. Our three horses match pace, and we proceed three abreast. She holds out her hand to him, and he kisses it.
How warm are you when I ride beside you?
She laughs. I don't think I've ever heard a laugh before. It's musical, carefree. She's glowing. The two of them whisper to each other, giggling. Someone up ahead in the column shouts. Two riders approach at a gallop. The pounding hooves grow louder as they thunder to a stop in front of us. What's wrong? I ask, straining to avoid the concern that I'm sure is written all over my face.
Scouting report, apprentice,
Praxis says, slightly winded from the excitement of the ride. His horse breathes lightly, but the other horse and rider create clouds of steam around them from their heavy breathing.
Ingrid rode to the beginning of Isel, then further onto the Lippa,
and the Rhine. Ingrid see Romans on this side of river.
What were they doing? I ask.
She curls her bottom lip and shrugs. Ingrid thinks they were chopping firewood.
How many?
20 and 5, maybe more.
Were they soldiers? Or were they just regular people?
They all wore helmets, and they acted like Roman soldiers.
Acted? I ask. She smiles.
Yes, Ingrid watched and listened to them for some time. They probably load their firewood and use bridge to cross back to the river at end of day.
Praxos, you're the Roman expert. What are your thoughts?
He pulls his lips tight. Sounds like a simple wood-cutting detail. Not even a full century. From the last report I remember, the Germanic border was weakened to fight off the Visigoths. So maybe they're all that's left of a full century. If so, then the entire region might be reduced to fewer than 2,000 men.
He pauses and flexes his shoulders.
I think Ingrid is right. They'll cut wood for a few days, returning to their castra before dark each night.
I look at the sky. If this overcast holds, it may help us sneak up on them.
A sneak attack?
Kynhard smiles.
That doesn't sound fair, Hecate says, looking somewhat up at the trees.
Fair?
Ingrid asks, her eyes like slits.
Praxos, I'm taking the vanguard, at least 200 of them, and attacking that woodcutting crew. I want you to continue to the place we selected and set up the base camp and supply depot.
He nods. Kynhard, you're with me.
Me too, Ingrid snaps.
No sense in arguing, I tell myself. Besides, it may be good to keep her and Hecate separate. Kynhard leans to Hecate and kisses her on the cheek. I smile just as Kynhard looks at me.
What are we waiting for, apprentice? Let's go cut off some Roman heads for blood,
he shouts as we urge our shaggy horses forward.
Yep, they're chopping wood all right, I say, as I peer around a tree at the edge of a heavily wooded outcropping of rocks.
Ingrid say come from this way, she points to the right, cut off Romans from the bridge.
I agree. Kynhard, any thoughts?
25 men, what do the rest of you do after I kill them all?
Ingrid frowns. Ingrid is not like her brother. Ingrid is not afraid of blood. She must kill quickly if you intend to kill more than Ingrid.
Just relax, you two. This isn't a competition. What else do you see? They say nothing. What about the far side of the river? Do you see any archers or men on horse who can respond quickly?
Ingrid sees nothing.
Me neither, says Kynhard.
I sigh. Okay. Let's head back to the others. As we turn, Kynhard places a hand on my arm.
Apprentice, you must tell me what this word okay means. I think it means things are good, or you agree, but you use the word so much, I cannot tell its true purpose.
I smirk. You've pretty much got it right. He purses his lips.
Okay.
We moved down a slight rise in the ground to where 200 men in dark green and brown cloaks wait quietly. The gurgling of the Rhine is audible, along with the distant sound of quarreling birds.
"Bows,"
I asked the men in a sort of shouted whisper. About half of them raise their traditional bows over their heads.
"Swords!"
The other half draws their weapons and does the same.
"Just like we planned. Let's go."
We spread out and move towards the edge of the woods. The tall grass and the brush conceals us as we approach. We stalk forward silently. Ingrid moves next to me and gives me a look. We whisper forward, stopping at intervals to listen. After some 200 yards, we begin hearing the thud of axes on wood, mixed with talking. I poke my head up and around a low juniper tree. I see more than a dozen Roman soldiers sitting on stones around a small fire. I turn to the rear and see several eyes trained on my position. I raise a hand, giving the signal. When I drop it, 100 arrows slice through the grass. I draw my sword and rush forward. The grass and the brush whips at my legs. To my right, I see 50 men in a dead sprint. To my left, Kynhard and another 50 doing the same. Screams and shouts from up ahead. Kynhard and I burst into the middle of their small day camp. I lunge forward and bury the Damascus blade into a Roman neck. It spits and foams blood out the other side as the man's words are cut short. I nearly stumble over a severed head as I move forward. Kynhard is swinging an axe like a hurricane. More shouts. The sound of Roman swords being drawn. The Romans have us at a disadvantage if they can assemble anything like a unit. But we simply have too many numbers for them. We press on, killing more as we go. Arrows hiss by, but from the wrong direction.
"Arrows!" I shout. "Good thing we chose to leave our shields with the others," he laughs. "Cannot have this too easy,"
Kynhard says, smiling. Ingrid races between us, holding a stolen Roman shield over our heads. "Ingrid, we don't..." Thud. Several arrows bury themselves into the shield. She lowers the shield and thrusts her chin at us.
"Your lives belong to Ingrid now."
She points to a stack of curved rectangular shields nearby.
"Don't be like stupid men. Take shields."
Kynhard and I share a sheepish look. We rush the 10 or so Romans who've managed to form a small wall of shields. Ingrid sprints at them and simply uses a man's shield as a stair step and leaps over their rank entirely. She turns on them with a spear, like a tiger ready to pounce. The Romans are unable to protect both sides, and in the moment of hesitation, Kynhard and I, along with several others, plunge into the breach. I drop my shoulder and ram a red shield with a thud and a grunt, then slice downward with my sword, cutting the front half of a man's foot off. He screams, a horrible, painful scream. Swords and spears flash while Kynhard cuts broad strokes with his axe, knocking several shields against their Roman owners, just as other Saxons pour over them. The Romans work as a team, but there are too many of us, and we've split their tiny formation in two. Ingrid keeps drawing their attention with frequent thrusts and stabs with her spear. In seconds, it's over. It's not even a fair fight, since we have one woman and they have none. We strip the bodies and take their equipment, all of it, including their clothes, armor, weapons, axes, cooking utensils, bows, a sled for hauling wood, and a small collection of rings. Oh, and we mustn't forget the heads. Yes, all 39 of them. In my other Twilight Histories world splits, there was a thrill of sorts. A thrill of conflict, combat, a thrill of killing another person. It always made me feel guilty. Sure, on the German-Russian front during the First World War, I had only killed a few. And on the USS Mayantonomo, I only supervised the gun crew. I'm sure we killed people there as well, but not like this. I mean, back in Britannia, I couldn't even hold my lunch after battle. In Vietnam, fighting in the pits and the pools, I never actually killed anyone. I take deep breaths, steeling myself without the others seeing me do so. And Kindheart is no help. Not with all those heads and cloaks, a few dozen of our men packing red sacks of heads like Santa Claus. I really didn't think Daragos was being so literal when she said the Romans owed 10,000 heads for a blood debt.
Only 9,961 heads to go, apprentice. At this rate, how long will it take us?
Kindheart beams. I'll do the math for you once we're back in camp, okay? I smile.
Okay, he answers.
If you enjoyed this show, consider picking up a copy of the book on Amazon or through the website at twilighthistories.com. It's our first Twilight Histories book, and Josh has put a huge amount of effort into it, expanding the story and making sure it was edited and beta tested. It's a solid, well-crafted book, and if you enjoy listening to it, why not have it on your shelf? When you purchase it, please give it a generous rating on Amazon. This will help the book get picked up by Amazon search engines, so it will be visible to others. You can find the book on Amazon by running a search for Josh Hutchins or Romano-Saxon War, or by going to the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening, and take care.